the facts are. At least half of the facts.
Well, the facts, there are no facts. The facts, they change on you. You change the rules and regulations that you gave.
Yeah, what is it that, what is that you go, you change the blah, blah, blah. What is you? What is you? What's it, what chemistry?
No, he said they change on
you. No, you, he said you change whatever you're responding to.
Mm-hmm. You, the human individual creator.
Got that, there's that phrase. Can we put some other words? What are the chemical constituents or etheric constituents of you, the human individual creator? What is that thing?
The confines of your fucked up mind.
All right, what's some of the chemical when they get the technology to scan people's brains and be able to scan the you, the individual creator that's screwing up the instrument's measurement of you or determining its your resonance with it, what will they say it's made up of? 400 beta waves or something, or alpha waves? What is it made up of?
You won't pin it down to one. You won't pin it down to a tactile or formula that says, "In this place you're sane, in this place you're crazy."
In other words, the very principle. Okay, we've pinned down what it is, the scientific instrument says. And then the human creator says, nah, you didn't pin it down, I'm over here.
Exactly, exactly. We have an example.
No, but that's a good, that is something that people have pointed out all through, well, I don't know how long. They point out that the human person is an autonomous thing that determines its own reality, and that will never be, quote, understood or pinned down.
Well, as soon as you do, then you change it. And we have a perfect example. They could do tests to check your sight, to see how sighted you are.
Your vision, yeah.
Well, and guess what? And guess how that's gauged? By you using your voice to say MEABCDF. Okay? That's they put it up on the wall.
Yeah.
They put it up on the wall, and then they gauge a test to see how many of those letters you can get.
Right.
But that's not your eyes that are taking the test. That's what your mind sees. And that's how they gauge your sightedness. Well, is that better or is that worse? Is that better or is that worse? Is that better or is that worse? By the clearness of it. And then they adjust your sightedness. Not based on your eyes, based on your minds, this looks better than this one. And the one or two yes or no choices. And it's in the individual. Now, they see anomalies with farsightedness and nearsightedness and macular degeneration and glaucoma. And there's other aspects that come along after the fact. But they still gauge it based on your ability to give them the letters that they're showing you. They've decided, here are the letters. And then you look at it and you start calling off other letters, and they're like, oh, you're blind as a bat. Well, maybe those don't line up for you the way they line up for them, the doctor. Or maybe somebody that doesn't know the alphabet. How do they take an eye test? Well, they do pictures. House, candy cane, orgasm. We don't know what a picture of an orgasm looks like, but they have these different symbols that they can use that the individual can relate to, okay? They relate to. And for example, if you were going to France.
No, listen, here's the issue I'm getting. So that the doctor knows that your mind is doing it, but they pretend that it's the sighted physical eyeball that they're correcting. But they know that it's your mental decision. So they say, is this clear or that clear? And they only discuss it. They might not acknowledge that your mind's doing it, but you're saying the mind is doing it.
Go to a French eye doctor and try to take the eye test, and if you don't follow their rules, they may call you blind.
I see. Yeah. Okay, so we were... Now, why were we doing that? What was the
Because topic? We were trying to make the point of...
Oh, yeah, consciousness. We can't see the thing that does the consciousness. Oh, so...
We should do shorter sentences so you can not forget...
No, it's all right. So that's what the word tactile to me refers to, Carol. The thing that organizes your sense life, we call that tactility.
Mm-hmm.
That's the invisible, inaudible, can't touch it, willful thing that human creator is changing itself all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You can't pin it down. That's actually what tactile means. It's in the gap, and in the gap you get surrealistic.
Well, Well, and it's all surrealistic, really. That's what you're actually your question.
Yeah, but when you say that's when you say, well, me and human creators, well, it's not all surrealistic because there is a shared reality that people seem to come up. And, that's what I'm interested in, the collective thing, how people agree, why they agree on certain things. It's very fragile. They agree. They agree this place looks like the same place every day.
But does it?
Yep. Now, if you looked at the subtle, changes, yeah, it's different. But there's
Not subtle. There'd be no news if everybody saw the same thing every single time. There'd be no news show. Why would there be a news show? Everybody'd be seeing the same thing at the same time. So, no. They spend all day, every day coming back.
What do you mean there'd be no news show?
There'd be no television news.
Why? If everybody could see? No, they don't.
If everybody saw the same things, they'd all know the same things, and it'd be...
Yeah, they don't. They block themselves, and they don't know what's happening in China.
Well, there you go.
Watch the news, and they agree.
But they don't know because it's not the same. Yesterday, somebody got murdered. Tomorrow, they don't say, oh, hooray, hooray, it's been a great day. Nobody got murdered today. Well, no, that's not good news. No. Not only did they get murdered, they got robbed, and they got raped before they were murdered, and they haven't found the body yet. So it just keeps going on and on and on and on and on for more and more from this dimension that nobody sees it the same way. Nobody sees it that way.
We know that half-truth, and you keep emphasizing it, but there's just the other half-truth that people go around agreeing that Carolyn's Carolyn, and she's a doctor, and other people aren't, and this and that, and they have a shared thing. If anybody pursued it, really looked at it, they'd find, well, Carolyn's not a regular kind of doctor. Then if they look at it, and if you get a bunch of people agreeing to look at it at the same time, then they might change their view. But that's the tactile process. We change reality, and reality imposes itself on us or among the group. That's the meme process.
So the point is based on the view.
The view. What's that? The view.
You were talking about.
No, not on the view. It's about a sharing.
Yes, it is about the view. It's how they see it. If they change their view of Carolyn, so then what you're saying is that everything then would be about the view
There's a general... We go between the individual subjectivity and willfulness and changing and being ornery and the shared part. And I'm always bringing this up about what is this shared part and how is that going to change? You know, it's like we're waiting to see how many people, human creators, are going to get all freaked out about the potential earthquake and whether they want it or not. And then the alpha waves build up and there's some kind of resonance, and then everybody, yeah, that's it, we want the big wave now. We're all going out now.
And the thing that we could agree on, that we could say that doesn't change, is that everyone has non-physical already within them. But even, and that's a truth. That's true.
Yeah.
But even that place of empirical can't disprove it proof, they'd still say, no, that's just the subatomic genius coming out in me, or no, that's just my physical.
Did you just say they couldn't prove, they misnamed the non-physical, they came up with another name. They'd say it's antimatter, but we haven't proven that yet, but it could be antimatter.
Okay, that's right. Even from that dynamic, from saying of the same, you're trying to have the empirical evidence of the constants that everyone has to agree on, and then we can agree to disagree. Well, you don't even have enough evidence to be able to disagree, let alone agree. So Marshall McLuhan, however, did make the statement that even half-truths are way more than what most people use to gauge their agreement or disagreement. Okay? Because this is very good. This is very, very good. Because what you're bringing up, let's just hold on a minute.
Yeah.
What you're bringing up for the individual human creator is that you if you can get rid of your mind, lose your mind. Oh, that's a bad thing. Oh, no. Yeah, let's lose your mind. Yeah, forget your mind. I can't remember my mind. I've lost my mind. I can't remember what I was supposed to remember. Which mind are you talking about, Ion? We need to get this cleared up now. See, get out of your mind and you just have meat sack, body, blood, guts,
right,
and vinegar, and you just had non-physical or spirit man,
right,
okay, and you had no mind,
right,
okay, then you would move into what you call your beast of your planet.
That's what they are.
Well, it's an example that we were hoping you could sort of embrace without bringing that nasty old mind back into the thing, the consciousness.
Yeah, okay. You were saying that's the way it is for animals. I get that.
Okay, all right. Now, if that's the case, see, an animal doesn't know or care. If you could get rid of your mind out of your picture, that's why the patients with the Alzheimer's that are in bad health, and they say, oh, I'm sorry, she has Alzheimer's. Now, all of a sudden, their body starts correcting things that are out of balance, and they don't have sugar anymore. They don't have allergies to nuts anymore. They don't have these issues that they had before because their mind doesn't press it into their place of being in their experience. So if you could take the question, the problem is the mind.
Okay, hold it. So, Karen, I wish you would participate in this.
I'm reading. I'm writing it all down.
Oh, okay. Well, I'd like to have your verbal input. But the what is the mind, then?
The labyrinth of the mind is the processes that you force your body, meat sack, and your non-physical spirit man to conform to.
Right, but it's not made up of silicon or magnesium or salt. Where it's not made up.
It's gray matter.
It's gray matter.
Because they don't even know what to call it.
Is that a term people use, Carol?
Yeah.
Gray matter. What do they mean by that?
The peanut butter of your mind.
The actual tissue
of the brain looks a bit gray, so they call it gray matter.
So they call the mind gray matter. But it's not that, or is it? Is it that tissue? If you hit that tissue, hurt it, it affects the mind? So it is
the mind.
It doesn't affect the mind,
it is the mind.
So we can see the mind.
Well, of course.
Well, we can see the physicality of the mind.
The substance.
Yeah, if you bang a baseball bat against it, it'll get inflamed and irritated and affect your thinking and
so
feelings.
So the gray matter, and they don't know what chemical compounds is made up of?
Yeah, they know the nerves and neurons and all the different chemicals. Sure, they know.
Right.
And they have different areas that have different function. Meaning if they start poking in the frontal lobe.
So there's the question of what's the brain and what's the mind? We're describing the gray matter constituent of the brain inside the skull, and yet it's probably not limited to that ion?
No, that's right. You're hitting it right, Bob. But we can't answer it that way because you haven't developed. Well, you haven't developed what you're talking about. And if we answered it either way, you'd still be confused.
Okay, yeah. Try to answer it, knowing that it's not going to work. Just so I can work with that. Let me work with this incomplete answer.
All right. That's fine. Okay. If you could remove your mind, lose your mind. They talk about people losing their mind.
Right. Have they lost their mind?
If you could lose your mind, then what you've lost is the walls of the labyrinth.
The walls of the labyrinth. Okay, but we have to stop. When you said if you lose your mind, that means losing some of the gray matter?
No, not physically.
I'm talking about the physics of it. You know, this gray matter.
Well, we're going beyond that. You asked for the next step beyond the gray matter and the chemicals.
Yeah, and I'm asking what am I leaving out?
And this is what he's telling you, and you're not ready for it.
Well, yes, I am ready for it. I got a question about it. What is it made up of?
The labyrinth conduits.
What are they made up of? Electricity?
Maybe.
Well, ask Ian. But, you know, we talked, it's not the gray matter, this mushy stuff that you could touch.
Well, let's ask you this, since you're ready for the next day. What is your body made up of? Physical meat sack.
All the components that the Wikipedia would tell me my arms and muscles and blood vessels are made up of, right?
No.
It does include that. No, you could say
no. It does not.
Oh, what does it include?
Well, no, it does not.
Well, what is it? What is it that does not? What is it?
It's only cells.
Okay, so it's cells. Those are physical.
No, wait. No, they're. Oh, are they? Oh,
boy. Okay. You got me cornered.
He bit.
Okay, stop this. I don't care where your distractions. Stay on point.
Well, what point?
See, now he's forgotten. We got him. Well, how'd you get me? Well, we can't remember.
Here we go. You are nothing other than cells. That's all you are.
Okay.
You are only cells. Because you're saying...
Hold that. We're only cells. What are cells made up of?
Protons, neutrons, and a field of ions.
Protons, neutrons, and you would include electrons?
Yes.
And a field?
In an ionic field.
The electrons are in an ionic field. So let me just
stop.
Let me tell you what I've gotten, so then you can correct it.
But you'll forget.
Look, I want to say that most people, when you ask what's a cell made up of, they go neutrons, protons, electrons. They don't say ions usually.
They're in the ionic field.
Beg your pardon?
You're more than one atomic molecular.
Okay, people will say proton, neutron, electron. That's what the cell's made up of. And then someone will say, well, what about the ion? Oh, well, I didn't know about the ion. What's that? And then
It's the field where more than one atom occurs.
More than one atom, which is made up of a proton, neutron, electron.
It's the peanut butter that smears the ions.
The electron, proton, neutron together.
Okay.
The ion's the tactility. That's what's so appropriate about ion as a name. It's the thing that glues things together, or smooths them over, or resonates them together to coherency, correct?
So that's what you are.
Those are four parts.
Yep, that's all.
Yeah, and the ion is a...
No more.
Right, no, I got that. But the ion is the nebulous envelope, the nebulous field. It's like the mind itself, in physical terms, that holds things together. You follow what I'm saying there?
Mm-hmm.
Did you get that ion?
He already agreed, Bob.
We don't need to. He already said it.
He already said what?
That this field holds it all together.
What did he say? We forgot.
Okay, so I repeated what you had agreed to, and you agreed to what I repeated.
Therefore, it was your idea.
No, don't bring the personality into it. I'm not claiming anything. I'm just using words to talk to you and trying to get it down, get the right words.
Okay. Now that's all because we ask you what
we're made up of. Those four relations,
and that's all. Because you were saying with arms and legs and this, that, and the other, because then we'd say, no, because some people can chop legs off, so now you're no longer human.
Oh, okay, you've got that. We're just making
what? So that's all it is.
You cut your leg off, and then you can feel a phantom pain. Is that what you were going to bring?
No, then you're still alive without your leg, so your leg isn't a requirement for what you're made up of.
So we've cracked the code. We know what we're made up of.
Okay.
What are they made up of? Those four things. What are they made up of? Is it the rock bottom? There's nothing below that. No subset of that. The neutrons.
Oh, but there is.
Oh, okay.
Is.
What is
here's the part that where you're gonna like.
Yeah.
Well, no. I don't know if you're going to like it or not.
Forget about whether I like it. Yeah, 50-50 shit. Don't worry about it. Don't take it personal, however I react.
You've got a 50-50 shit.
Don't take it
really
personally,
like
however I react.
They human creators with the physical, non-physical, with their labyrinth of their mind, with walls intact, gray matter snapping, and working normally, okay? Yeah. Here you go. They're now discovering... When you have these atoms that have the electrons, they're constantly moving.
Okay, the atom is the proton, neutron, electron, and ion, correct?
Well, in an ionic field.
Ah, okay, three parts, three and four, or three and another part. Okay.
Correct. And we'd say...
And they're finding out, now they've got your definition, they're finding out what?
They're finding out that electrons are here, and then they pop and they're here.
Oh,
and they pop and they're here. And then they look really closely. With they have now electron microscopes.
Yeah.
And they realize that there's two electrons can be in the same place at the same time.
Right.
And they also can disappear from its structure altogether. And that anomaly is really causing some stir and some problems because the labyrinth of the mind said that the world is flat.
That's right. So what I get from that is they're realizing that there's something other involved than the four components. You know what I mean?
No. There's something else involved. Yes.
Yeah, that's and making the ion act aberrant and anomalous, and that the only way you can solve that is bringing the non-physical.
Into
parallel worlds.
That's it. And that's what proves
right
parallel worlds, because that's all you are is cells, lots of
and
them.
That's what's going on at your basic foundational
and that's what's
structure.
Going on at your basic
yes. And the rest of the world resonates, echoes that point.
And that's the consistent anomaly that they don't understand.
Right. Carol's smiling. You like that, Joan?
Mm-hmm.
You got it?
Got it. Perfect.
Now, that's at the basis level. Now, we've done that from your physical.
Yeah.
Now, what is your non-physical?
Yeah. What's it
what
made
is
of?
That?
Yeah. What is that? That's right. What is it? What is that? If it's not physical,
You can have non-physical with no meat sack whatsoever.
Okay,
ions, no protons, neutrons.
That's right.
No, none of that.
Okay, hold on.
Don't go any further.
Yeah, we got that. Almost any minute. Now, just let's say this. So you've got the electron bouncing around. That does not necessarily mean there's non-physical, but it means within the realm of matter, there's more than one world. The bouncing on electron does imply not only
it
parallel
does.
Worlds,
it
but
does.
Implies
what
non-physical.
Does
it imply non-physical?
No.
Okay, so
not.
I'm understanding it to be only within the physical. It's the physical foundation, and it implies two conversations of everything to other worlds. That's that. That's in the physical. We still don't know what the non-physical is.
Good. Yeah. And so we ask, and we still don't know, and we were trying to tell you, so we got that cleaned up. Okay.
Yeah.
Non-physical is not bound by your molecular structured rules and regulations.
Right.
If this is your
is it bound by the mind?
No. Hell no. Oh, thank God.
Remember the Stone Cold Dead tapes. Mm-hmm. Once you're just non-physical, there's no mind.
No mind. Oh, yeah.
Right.
Okay.
You don't mind.
Right. So you
are never mind.
Yeah, never mind.
Never mind.
Yeah, I got it.
Never mind. Good.
Yeah. So you're pointing out that it's not physical. It's not
at
physical.
All.
Yes.
And when you're talking about non-physical, it's a collective. It's not an individual.
Mm.
It's a collective entity.
Mm.
It's all. Now, the way you'd show up in those applications of non-physical can be the inertia that causes kinetic energy to begin to be begun.
Okay, so you're now bringing in physical things, inertia and kinetic energy, right?
Yes, because you don't understand. You humans don't understand that either, but you know the representations and the valuations of those.
And what's an example
the
of inertia?
Thereof.
What's the values of inertia and kinetic energy? What's the expression of that?
Speed, being sedentary, hot, cold.
Oh, okay.
Even emotions, happy, sad, even conjecture, I'm at peace, I'm ill.
It almost brings in the attitude of the mind.
Well, no, the mind is what gauges how you're doing.
Oh, and how you're doing is the inertia and kinetic energy. But that's a two-way process, because you could subjectify how you're doing, you know?
Absolutely. But you do.
All right,
that's
the mind fact. So back to what you're saying somewhere is the non-physical starts to touch and be manifested in the physical as kinetic energy or inertia.
It's the example of how it shows up.
Mm.
It's how they tell that you're still alive.
That's why people are affected by other people's actions. They feel.
That is correct. Yeah. That is correct. And that's the non-physical plugging in to the physical from the largeness.
Yeah, when people say you hurt my feelings, they're addressing the non-physical thing.
They're talking all of the feeling place that touches them. But other people then would say, well, you didn't, I'm so sorry I stepped on your foot. No, it's okay, I didn't feel a thing. Or you didn't step on my foot. I'm not going to let you close enough to hurt me.
Well, that's a flip, but it started off when the person said, you hurt my feelings, and the other guy said, oh, I'm sorry. No, you didn't hurt my feelings. That's the assertion of individualness in relation to the collective non-physical.
Separates you from being judged by the overlay.
Right. Is that the mind doing that?
It's the mind's application. It's the mind's application, but it's not the mind's fault.
Right. See, you've got the non-physical as a collective. Once you start getting in the physical, there's a sensation of being an individual, and the mind kind of supports that in relation to the non-physical collective.
But then duality kicks in, and you go, wait, every human has the same amount of time. No, they don't. They last different numbers of days.
Yeah.
No. We're saying that every human on the planet that's alive, they have the same amount of time, okay, that day. They have 24 hours a day or whatever. And we go, well, no, not so much, because some humans can get a ton of stuff done in an hour, and some people can't get nothing done in an hour, and that's not the same application of time. Well, no, see, it's the sameness. You have the consciousness, the collective consciousness, that's saying all men are equal, and then you have the individual saying, well, I'm glad I'm more equal than they are.
Yeah.
I'm glad I'm more equal than she is. I'm glad I don't have that issue.
Right.
Wait, okay. So then you twist that back around from the collective side of non-physical, and then it becomes the application of the distance between the physical and the non-physical,
which is both you. Yeah, there's the you that's an individual and the you that's the collective.
That's correct.
And it's A is to B, is C is to D all the time, jumping around in ratios, right?
And the ratios are gauged by the judging contest of the labyrinth of the mind.
Right.
And who's the judge? You are. Well, how do you judge? Not so well.
Right, but here's an issue. So the mind usually is judging based on matter, cultural input, but they probably overlaps a bit into the non-physical.
Absolutely it does, because there's things that show up that can't be that are.
Right, so... What? So
there's things that show up that can't be that are.
Right, so the way the ionic field holds together...
Yeah,
the electron, proton, neutron sounds a bit like the mind. If you understand the mind is in the interval between modulating the cultural conditioning of the physical and leaking in and responding to non-physical, that's sort of what the ion is, sort of.
Well, you're not going to catch us like that. Let's say it like this: if the labyrinth of the mind, if you could remove the walls of the labyrinth, then you would be able to see clearly from one side of the mind to the other side of the mind.
Mm-hmm.
And there would be no choice or nebulous disconnection of being lost.
Is that what happens when you're dead, when you've transitioned?
No, it is not.
Yeah, there's no mind. But within the physical,
right,
if you could take away the wall, is that reflected in the role of the ion, the basic cellular structure?
Yeah, and also it would give you clear-sightedness, so there would be... still be contrast, because you'd still be in your confines of a labyrinth. It'd just be four square walls rather than a whole bunch of little rat trails where the rat's trying to find the cheese through the maze. It takes the amazement out of the maze.
Right, so if you remove the ion, the something could see why the
if you remove the walls from the maze of the mind, you'd still have physical, you'd still have non-physical, and you'd have a mind, but it wouldn't be a labyrinth. You'd be able to clearly see all views and directions within your beingness.
Can you do that?
You damn sure can, and that's when heaven's going to show up on Earth.
When you remove the walls of your mind.
Absolutely, because then guess what? For the first time ever, you don't have to wonder, well, if I turn right, where will I go? Well, I'll go this way because I've done this before, and if I go this way, I'm the rat and I get the cheese. Well, then they change it, and then it can't can't go that way. Then it's lost. And then, well, what if I eat a Snicker bar? What if I don't eat a Snicker bar? Blah, 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 blah. All these choices and twistings that you wind through, if you knew the outcome, that you're going to be just as whole with a Snicker bar or without a Snicker bar, then you could follow the choice of what your preference to prefer would be. And without the maze, then you would be able to not wonder or question. You would know. I know.
Okay. So the
it's very good, Bob.
Yeah. Very okay, hold it. It's the ion. Compliments later. The ion. Can we talk about the ion as a metaphor of what you're describing with the walls removed from the mind? Do I even bring the ion into it?
Yes, you certainly can, because it's the field that you're using to judge how these molecular atoms are connected together, the structure.
Okay, so you remove the walls of the mind, and that would affect the field of the ion.
It would take the amazement out of the maze.
And what would it take out of the ion?
Nothing.
But
it would open up your view. You wouldn't be limited by the question. You wouldn't have to. You wouldn't be talking to non-physical, wondering if it was really non-physical, or if it really was, or if you were God, or if you had power. Or if
so.
God.
So, is it useful to bring in the ion in this conversation?
Certainly, it is. It's the field by which you're trying to open up your view.
Okay. So
that's why we were poking at the view earlier.
Then we come to the question of how do you remove the walls of your mind? You're back to the conundrum.
Field of perspective.
How do you remove the walls of your mind?
By very simply attaching as much significance to your non-physical part as you do your physical part.
Oh, okay.
You got it, so let's finish it.
Yeah.
By opening up your mind to, what is it they say on Fringe, innumerable impossibilities.
Opening up your mind to that.
Yeah, that there is help, that there is a universe you're the center of, that you are in charge of it, that you are all-powerful, all-knowing.
But that requires at first a belief. You start believing it. You start believing.
Because the evidence becomes so fractured. The evidence, the empirical evidence, becomes so fractured that you have no choice but to at least acknowledge it.
And that's where the faith comes in, what they call it.
Well, no, that's where science can't prove that it isn't.
Right.
It never takes faith.
Believe yourself.
Science can't disprove.
Yeah, you believe yourself into the cracking the walls of your mind.
And that's done by thought, and that takes place in where? The mind.
And where's antimatter in the middle of that?
It is the opposing view that makes the black hole the anomaly that you can't get past, the event horizon that you can never arrive to.
Oh, okay, so antimatter is something that's engaged in this process of believing yourself to remove the walls of your mind. Antimatter is engaged in that? It's involved?
It's the opposite.
It's saying, you can't do it.
Right.
Is saying, you can't do it.
Correct. But the point of this whole...
And you have to wrestle with that.
You don't have to, but many do.
Yeah, you don't have to, figure out how to ignore it without ignoring it and all that.
Then answers will be questioned.
And what it is it's when you know that there's the ionic field, that immediately expands your view of the three... Neutron, proton, and electron. It gives you that space of distance, the detachment.
Right. Now, most people, the average person who's got a basic high school education or college, knows there's a neutrons, electrons, and protons, right? I don't know if the kids know about the ion. Maybe they teach it in school.
More than the
parents. See, I'm talking about what the average person thinks. I don't know people who talk about the ion, Carol, but I haven't talked to people, and I'm not talking to young kids, but let's say the young kids might know about the ion, but adding ion to the thing is a new factor for you, right, Carol? And that's a metaphor of ion showing up, and it's being called on to complete the triad, to complete the meaning of the electron, proton, and neutron. That's what I see.
It's the metaphor
of you showing up on. You're showing up now because the ion is the marginalized particle that people haven't been told much about. Do you agree with that metaphor?
They have been. They just don't call it that.
What do they call it?
The Age of Aquarius, the Flower Children, the Punk Rockers.
That's what they call the ion.
Well, that's what allows the ion to be empirically referenced.
The Punk Rockers.
You can have hippies. How did hippies decide that they wanted to be hipsters? Well, that's the ionic field that allowed the overlapping.
Right.
That was not bad or wrong or outside of normal.
The ionic field, as you're saying it, is the factor of what McLuhan meant by tactility. Ion is the tactile. The tactile is a field.
It's the sameness of tactility.
Yes.
That's good. Here we go. I have this pain, and this pain shows up over and over and over, and other people have the same pain, so therefore you have bursitis. That's the ionic field that allows the overlapping of even lack of ease.
You mean the overlapping where two people have the sameness? Oh, you've got the same
symptoms, right. In the ionic field will give a doctor a heads up that you have the flu or a cold or cancer or tumor.
Well, he doesn't think about it as a tactile field. He just says, oh, you've got the same symptoms as that person.
I've only looked at the most disconnected ones, so the most disconnected ones have this, and when they have this, it's that.
Yeah, but that's how we got into this. This comes back to the opening point. Where does individual consciousness overlap with the general sharedness of some idea that everybody kind of agrees is happening? Do you know what I mean? Like time. The idea there's time is something everybody thinks is there. And why?
Well,
You're just saying that the ionic field is what makes the doctor see bursitis in two people. That is answering slightly my question about what the heck is it that goes from individual subjectivity where everybody's the center of the universe and they're all seeing a different thing, yet they kind of agree a bit. That's through the ionic field?
Correct.
Then ion can be appropriate metaphor for creating a new religion past templardom and Christendom. Because ion is pointing out the field aspect, the tactile aspect, and then elaborating in these terms and these topics as you did tonight.
That allow you, and the job, the reason, the point of this conversation, again, you've heard this, but let's do it one more time, that this is there's something new that's just bubbling.
Say it.
All right. Could you spell the word nowhere?
Nowhere.
Okay. And if you put a space.
Now here.
Yeah, now here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you say, now here.
I know Gerd Stern. I mean, we play with that division a lot. Erewhon, the book by Samuel Butler, is now here backwards. Nowhere, now here. We've done a lot of that in the McLuhan School, but that's why it's not so surprising to me.
Well, I understand it, but it is
You develop it. Develop it.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. The nowhere.
Yeah.
Now here.
Yeah.
Is the anomaly that you spend all day, every day, of answering of where are we?
Right.
We, not me, well, not where am I? Well, we're now here. Well, that's nowhere. Well, that nowhere is the example that you're trying to bring the anomaly closer to. We're nowhere close to where we should be. So we're
even
now
though here. We're still now here.
Exactly. And that answering of that question becomes how skewed your labyrinth is. See,
the labyrinth is a tactile, is an ionic field, in a way. The field between now, here, and nowhere, or the dialectic, the interplay.
That's just the difference between you and you.
That's another way of saying it. Now, here, and nowhere.
But if you could remove the amazement of the maze.
Mm-hmm.
If the labyrinth of your mind, you could take the maze out of the labyrinth of your mind,
right.
And you would clearly see where you are. You would clearly see where your non-physical are. And then the distance between those could be gained inclusively because you'd see the perspective of where your physical is and where your non-physical is. Then you wouldn't have all these questions of can I do it, is it okay, will they kill me, can they kill me, am I good, am I bad, can we do it, yes we can.
Many people have arrived at that perception or perspective.
And if they have, that's the key that Thoth was trying to get you in the place with your emerald tablets of saying, if you could get rid of the amazement, the maze,
yeah,
then guess what? It's not a hard journey. Life is not difficult. There aren't, you aren't confounded every single moment of your every single day of nowhere that you're now here. And if you can figure out your perspective of your GPS, where your balloons are, of where now here is, then nowhere becomes quite an anomaly. And if it's an anomaly, then if you're not squandered by the perspective or the energy that it takes to understand that the electrons are not bound within this spherical plane. So once you understand that, parallel worlds, multifaceted worlds, become as easy as pie. Well, pie sometimes isn't easy, but pie is easy. It's easy as pie. You just put it in the pot and make pie.
So what, you've integrated, like, Rai, the definition of Rai was the, that awareness, cosmic awareness talked about, was the original awe, A-W-E, and so the word author was a subset of awe. So the principalities were built on awe, or amazing, is stunning, and that was McLuhan meant, the medium is a message, the environment stuns you, you are shaped by it, and he tries he tries to get you to see through it. You're completing that by pointing out that we get rid of the amazement in the maze, and the amazement is the awe principle. You're stunned by where you are.
And you wouldn't be stunned if you could see all the perspectives and the choices of how it's going to come out.
Right. So
you wouldn't be stunned. That's good.
Say that again. The choices of how
you wouldn't out. if there was no amazement, if there was no maze.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be stunned by your perspective of the distance between you and you. But right now you're just amazed. You are amazed.
Right.
That means riddled. That means you can't figure it out. That means that it's, if you do figure it out, you're just surprised beyond your knowing. Well, if you know, then you're no longer surprised beyond your knowing.
Yeah, but part of the ability to do that, getting beyond your amazement, is to know that once you think you've arrived, it's going to change again and you'll be re-amazed. So you catch on to the tactile fluidity of the process, and then you're not...
But it doesn't have to be tactility. There is fluidity, but it doesn't, within the ionic field, there doesn't have to be. There can just, you do this, you're the best one probably on the planet, Bob, even better than all, better than JW even. And he, we think a lot of him because he knows who he is. But
right.
you do it better than most all, because you won't even embrace it long enough to notice your perspective that you've calculated that's within your beingness or knowingness of accepting something. Because you figure, the time I take the time and energy to figure something out, it'll be all old hat.
Right. Now, that's what I was trying to say, that I can move rapidly, so to speak, and I know I'm going to be re-amazed, but I can erase it pretty quickly and then get ready for the next amazement, the next moment, the next now, and then ignore that.
We don't have a problem with the labyrinth itself, but what if the walls weren't quite so high? What if your field of vision wasn't askewed?
Yeah.
Maybe if it was like a half fence. You have to stay within these parameters, but if you could see over the wall, here at the wall, here at the wall, if you could say here at the wall and see over it, then guess what? You'd say, okay, I'm going in this sort of geographic direction, so if I keep taking a left-hand turn, and then every time I take a left or take a right, it's going to move me to that corner because that's where the cheese is, then you just seamlessly stroll along the way going in the direction that you are trying to achieve, which if you're the rat in the maze, it's to get the cheese.
Mm.
And if you could lower the wall, if you could take your field of perspective or raise your eye level within this ionic field, then guess what? You don't get caught with your pants down. You know the outcome. You know the flow. You know the process. And once you know that process, you can still have all the the contrasting feelings of life, because you want the contrast, that's how you create, but you don't have to be so buried by it.
Yeah, you never get down, you never get rid of the wall and the continuous amazement, but you're really good at erasing it pretty quickly and
or
demanding
above it.
Seeing above it, and you say, okay, reality, bring more on. Oh, I can handle
that. That's an ascended being, one who can see over the wall.
Right, and knows that you never totally get over the wall. And so we, every day, do our day, then we interact with Ion. And interacting with Ion exercises us seeing through or over the wall. And that's a metaphor for if we didn't have Ion, we might have another means to exercise ourselves. But
well,
you constantly wonder,
okay, we're now here,
yeah.
But that's nowhere. We're
right.
No closer to here than we were when we were there. Well, we were there, but now we're
and
here.
And if you relax and allow in that process, which I do, so
then
I'm always I'm always erasing the wall. And
then you don't notice.
And
oh,
notice.
You don't erase the wall. You just don't mind where you are in that perspective.
Right.
You relax and allow where you are, so I'm perfectly happy. You were perfectly happy in New York, and you're perfectly happy in Maui.
Right. So
you didn't know the difference other than Carolyn moved, and you thought you might better go with her.
Yeah, it was more convenient. I didn't have to put on so many shoes or clothes.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And that's fun.
But you didn't know that until you got here.
Well, I enjoyed the amazement part here. Oh, this is great. You know,
and you enjoy it so much so that relaxing and allowing allows a new confidence in your place of knowing. I think I know.
Yeah, that helped Ion happen.
Of course.
Yeah, so the...
That activation is the ascension process that we're trying to get the physical meat sack, the non-physical consciousness, and the labyrinth of the mind not to be offended or raise your awareness, cosmic or otherwise, to the degree that you can see the full perspective of where you are and where you're going and the distance between you and you. Then, guess what? Everything becomes your oyster. You can then find the pearl every single time.
Right, in my particular case, I treed it. I didn't. Now we're going. Okay, let's go to Maui. Well, it might be different. I don't know. And I get here, and then I enjoy the difference. And
right.
Then so we want more, and then more comes. So that's the ascension process.
Correct. And once you get there, then you're not wondering, well, did we mess up? Are we supposed to write a book? Are we not supposed to write a book? Are people going to buy this? Or do we want a website? What kind of website? Well, what do we have to do for people to notice? And if we're going to write the blog of the future now, what does it have to be for people to actually engage it? And how much can we do to get them into the place where they'll take it on and this becomes part of their beingness so much so that they would actually be interested in this particular format in which we're laying it out? Do we have to lay it out a different way? And then if we decide to go that way, which words do we have to buy from Google to make this so that force people into a place of recognizing that this will help them and they'll be happy if they'll ever figure this part out? And see, even after you figure it all out and get it developed, then you come back and say, well, then how do I do it better? How do I do it more efficiently? How can I type the same number of words and reach 10,000 more people rather than having to do the same words 10,000 times?
Mm.
Okay? And that's what you call efficiency. But it's only allowing yourself to come to this place where people stand in amazement and go, wow. You know, that chick looks about 30 and she's 112. What's she got going on here?
Yeah.
There must be something to this, and I don't really care what she says. I just want to eat what she's eating and do what she's doing.
That's the closest way I can understand of how to imitate her to get there.
Exactly. Apparently, I'm not offended by the outcome that she's embraced.
Yeah.
Apparently, I am not offended by the outcome that she has embraced.
Yeah.
Now, does that make her all-knowing and being and seeing? No, she has questions. She has contrast. She figures it out. She spins it up and makes pate most days, okay? And that's okay, fine. But in that process, she's constantly redefining that level of degree of perfection to make the recipe of life come out. the way she wants it to come out, the way she wants it to come out. Maybe there's a different application. Maybe we want it more like mayonnaise or less like mayonnaise or a different degree if we play and adjust with the frequency of the recipe. Now, once that happens, if there's the non-physical part. We're talking about Carolyn, if you haven't figured this out yet.
Yeah.
There's the non-physical part of Carolyn is resonating at a different level. She has a different kind of client than she used to have.
Mm.
They used to, she'd only get those that are on the edge of hospice, but there's no way that non-physical couldn't even help them because of where they are, and those were her lot. Well, then she redefined what she wanted, and she could peep over the wall, and she's starting to remember that whole process, and then different clients are showing up in her experience. And that was, it felt pleasurable to her. And it's kind of like, cool, okay, I can go with this, I like this, yeah, I'll have a little more. Yes, I'll have a little more, yes, I'll have a little more. But you don't start off with a great big vat of that because you don't know how you're going to digest it. So you limit that flow based on your comfort level of achievement. But that's what you'd like to reference it as. So it makes it very simple and very easy that you don't need $100 million to make your point. You can make your point with where you are.
Right?
And they'll show up. They just will. And you just keep doing what you're doing because what you're doing is what you're going to do with $100 million or without $100 million. The same. When it's the same, then it doesn't make any difference. But when it doesn't make any difference, they'll build a road to you and have it go nowhere else but to you. Well, that's the ascension process that we've sort of developed and coming to a place where we need real, live, living, physical, breathing examples of how you attach the physical meat sack, the non-physical part, through the unamazing labyrinth of the mind. The unamazing labyrinth of the mind. When the labyrinth of your mind has less amazement, then you have a higher degree of a confidence to proceed in the pathways that you sojourn.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, we talked about the four and the fiveness, the four and the fiveness a little while ago. So you've got the four relations, the electron, proton, neutron, and the ion. Is there a new particle or something you would name that comes in as you ascend? Is there a fifth element, a fifth particle? You know what I mean?
Yes.
Is it the axion?
No. That's a good word, but it's not.
Yeah.
Well, what did Thoth call it? They called it an ascended, the ascension, the ascended man.
So maybe become a capital E for electron, a capital N for neutron, capital R, capital T.
Yeah, but
T
those bodies don't, no, you wouldn't notice it that way. You'd only have a whole U and a whole U.
Yeah, you wouldn't even have that image. You wouldn't have that image of your, you wouldn't use a particulate image.
That is correct, but you also wouldn't have that individual. Once you're ascended capital M-A-N, then you would notice that the particulate field is being individualized.
Yeah.
You'd realize that that those electrons that are constantly jumping also take the nucleus in its retrospect. So therefore, if it's in retrospect, then the world that you're in right now may be very different than the world you're in nowhere.
Right, did you say the electron takes the nucleus or the neutron with it?
It takes all of it with it.
Oh, okay.
That's why it's anomalous.
When it jumps, it takes it all with it.
Yes, let's paint a picture this way, and you're going to, this one's good. And I don't care if you like this one or not, it's the way it is.
You like it.
The neutron, the center, the nucleus of the cell, if the electron can disappear and both can inhabit the same time-space, then, therefore, the nucleus of that cell must also be able to be dividable within two parallel realities.
Yeah, that's... What'd you say? divisible within two parallel. That's the two snowballs that Nina shows in Fringe, in a way.
From a cellular level.
Yeah.
But if that's the case, if that's the case, if one cell is two worlds, or if an electron, which is by definition the part that goes around the nucleus of a cell, that's where you had to figure out how to do it to split an atom.
Yeah.
And when you did that, you caused all kinds of energy flow from the splitting of a single atom in a particular field. Well, that's because those two electrons can inhabit the same space or neither space. They jump. Well, when if that's the case, then that nuclei has to also, if it's standard, then it has to be representative of multi-worlds.
Right.
Otherwise, those electrons can't imbibe the same space in the same year-time continuum or be eliminated for they both to disappear or completely disappear from the nucleus of an atom.
Yeah, so cell division is an approximation of what goes on, which you've explained.
So cell division is replicating itself. It's the replication.
Right, and that's and this dividing the nucleus to be both worlds with the electrons and dragged it to the other world, that is not represented by the replication division.
That is exactly correct, and very good, Bob, because that's what would decide how thick the walls of your labyrinth are. Good. That's very good.
Right, but you said that. Now, what is that that would decide? I made a whole statement, but what is it that would decide how thick your walls were? We were talking about the cell replication versus the nucleus.
The dividing of nucleus, cell division.
Yeah. So which of those two is the that which makes the difference?
The cell division. That was the only that.
The cell division meaning the replication or the both kinds?
No. Cell division is not replicating. Cell division is cells dividing. And that replication is what can determine the thickness of your wall, of the labyrinth of your mind.
And that's not connected to the process of the nucleus being divided to cover the electron jumping.
Very good.
Yeah.
That's correct. It doesn't undo parallelism.
Okay. What? The cell duplication division does not undo.
Right.
Yeah. See, we're talking about two things. We have to indicate which one you're indicating when you go to the next sentence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again.
So the thing is, all this is irrelevant if the person becomes ascended. And so the whole model...
They won't ascend until they can have the empirical proof of the proof in the pudding that it is.
Right.
No. You're going to prove to me that there's ESP, or even if I've got it, I'm not going to have it.
Right. I'm just saying this image of the electron, of the atom that we're talking about, that's a shared image of what the mind doesn't have to have that. Or why do people agree that matter is made up of that?
The same reason that they didn't understand there was antimatter until it was.
Yeah, they didn't know this the way it was until it showed up, until it was defined. But why?
So they couldn't disprove it.
Yeah, but why did minds agree? They did not have this image
of consciousness. The consciousness within their beingness. They used their power to divisively divide themselves from their power.
Through developing technologies, because they couldn't...
But technology is what put everybody tweeting at the same time, and Facebook on the same space, and MySpace on the same iSpace.
Yeah.
And that over the technology actually corralled it back around to put everybody back to the... You mean everyone has genitalia? Yes. Would you like to see mine?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And I'm so excited about it that makes me want to look at mine. And then I notice mine's different than yours, but it's still genitalia. Isn't that interesting? Then you come to a place where that becomes such a place that now even sexuality has no modesty.
Right.
Now it's no big deal. And so the next sex side will be... The my sexy big toe, and you have a big toe website where you can look at other people's big toe and just be aroused from the looking at someone else's big toe.
Okay,
makes about as much sense as the size of the genitalia.
Yeah, in Shakespeare's era, they did not have the image of the neutron, proton, and nucleus, and electron. Why?
Oh, but the concept they most certainly did. That's where the fate, that's what William Shakespeare and Chaucer and T.S. Eliot and all those in that swirling spin